to go back to this idea that touch equals sex, it's like if you don't have touch available for comfort when somebody's grieving, or you know, relief when they're stressed out, or relaxation, or what have you, then you know, there's a lot that doesn't get the, you know, that people don't have the ability or capability to get. And you know, like your example that you said earlier about, you know, couples who are like, oh, not gonna, my husband's like hugging me or touching me, that must mean he wants sex, or you know, partner, I'm sorry, you know, because sometimes it goes the other way around. I mean, with my hands-on business, you know, we definitely saw men who were like, yeah, I want more touch, and my wife's not into it. But you know, that's just not available for people, you know, when we sexualize all of the touch.
Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Epiphany Jordan, on the Tool for Dish It podcast. I'm your host, Angie. You can come and find me at angies.com. That's angie-s.com, or on my Linktree link, which is linktree.com/tool for dish it. Both links are in the show notes, just like every week. Listen, that's the place you can go if you want to be part of my community, if you want me to show you how to create your own podcast and get involved with what I do. I'd love to see you there. So if you like the show, please give it a 5-star rating and review, and be sure to tell your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you are listening to right now. The more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover this show. In today's episode with Epiphany, author of the book Somebody Hold Me, we talk about touch in its platonic form, from anything from how it's perceived in different cultures and across times, boundaries, how to ask and refuse platonic touch, you know, and by that I'm talking, you know, often like a hug, and alternative solution for single people on how to replace a hug when you're by yourself. So without further ado, let's begin. Welcome, Epiphany.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you so much for joining me today. I am really excited and intrigued about this topic that we're going to go on. So I'm really happy that I got you on board, because today we're going to talk about the healing properties of platonic human touch. You wrote a book on it. You created a whole venture around it. And there's more to come as well, the different path that you're creating around it. And so, you know, there are certain things, you know, I was looking online before, you know, just before now, before we're connecting, obviously looked into what you did. But I thought, let me just see what Google says about human touch. And I just picked up the first thing just to see what comes up at number one. And I saw this bit that said, and I'm quoting this from a website. I probably should have put down the website, so I'm so sorry to the website. But this way it said, there are studies showing that touch signals safety and trust. It soothes. Basic warm touch calms cardiovascular stress. It activates the body's vagus nerve, which is intimately involved with a compassionate response, and a simple touch can trigger a release of oxytocin, aka the love hormone. So my question, you know, some of the things that we're going to talk about today is that, why are we so starved from touch? Like, why is touch so sexualized or need to be within a romantic involved partnership, or, you know, or getting a hug from a family member, if your family even gives that hugs, right? Not all families do. So all of this and perhaps more is what I love to talk with you, Epiphany Jordan, today. So before we dive in, please introduce yourself, where you live, and what you do.
Hi again. Thank you, Angie. My name is Epiphany Jordan. I live right now in Austin, Texas, and I am on a mission to redesign human touch. I would like to see us think about touch as something that is integral to health and wellness, as opposed to our current paradigm, which equates sex with touch, which means that you can only get your touch in romantic relationships. And this paradigm is leaving most of us out. It's definitely leaving single people out, but it's also leaving people who are in partnered romantic relationships out as well. And so I've been working on this and studying it for about 8 years now. And it's a pretty fascinating topic that touches, no pun intended, most areas of our lives. It's very, very integrated and it encompasses so much. It encompasses so much, so many different areas of our lives.
Yeah, it does. And it's funny because we're not even the only ones that crave touch, you know, like horses, dogs, cats, they all, you know, sentient beings do crave touch. And you know what you mentioned about the even people in a romantic partnership, they are also sometimes touches, you know, just pure platonic touch can be an issue. I mean, I know I did an episode with, I can't remember if it was with Courtney or Chelsea, but that women sometimes will forego a cuddle or a hug with their partner because they feel it always comes with the pressure or understanding that sex will automatically follow. And the fact that pressure is on there puts you off being touched. You almost don't want it. It's like a allergic reaction. Whereas the paradox, right, is that if you get like let's say if you are in love with your partner and he hugs you or holds you, let's say if he's a man, right? He hugs you or holds you, or if he's a woman, and there is no pressure to sex, all of a sudden, I mean, to me, that's like the fastest route for my romantic partner to get laid, basically.
Totally.
Because I'm actually, I feel relaxed. My body is opening up and relaxing, and it's like, welcome.
Absolutely. That's actually the first book that I wrote that I think we're going to talk about a little bit later is about nurturing human touch for single people. And then the next book I want to write is a book about nurturing human touch for couples.
Actually, so what is the name of your book? You haven't mentioned it.
Oh, I have not mentioned it. You're right. I forget. I've got, you know, so many million directions I'm going off in. So the book is called Somebody Hold Me, The Single Person's Guide to Nurturing Human Touch.
I love that. I love that title, Somebody Hold Me. It says so much.
Yeah, it tested really well with people. It really resonated because, you know, as we've said, because we equate sex with touch, it's like we don't have touch for comfort or relief or relaxation or, you know, just caregiving in general, you know. And I'm sure people can relate to being in a space where you're just feeling overwhelmed or traumatized or you've had a bad experience or a loss of some sort. And, you know, where do you go to just get somebody who, like, you know, give you a long hug or a cuddle and just, you know, kind of be like, hey, it's going to be all right. It makes such a difference.
Yeah, no, and we're gonna go into all of that. But the first question I have for you is, what got you, you know, what is it that got you to do what you do, aka like talk about platonic touch and subsequently write a book on it? Like, was there any? Is there like a summary of a story of like why you even doing this?
Yes, there is. So in 2008, I was studying sacred sexuality with a woman, Anara de Luna, and the Temple of the Red Lotus. And she lived in Atlanta, Georgia, and she was part of the pagan community. And so she would go to different pagan festivals and, you know, do presentations and workshops and events that were around sexuality. And one of the events that she had us do that we were working with her on one night was called a Karuna session. And it was an experience of non-sexual touch. And the experience was really profound, being a provider of this for participants. And it really stuck with me. And I kept thinking about it. And a few years later, I asked a friend to start playing around with the format with me. And people just really loved it. And so we ended up turning into a business. And we ended up closing down last year because of the pandemic. And then, I think, when was it, 2017, I ended a relationship that I was in for 5 years. And I knew from the work that I was doing and the research I had been doing that, you know, if I didn't end up dating somebody else, if I didn't get into another romantic relationship, then that was pretty much it. I was SOL. And also one of the other reasons for writing the book was that our service was amazing, but it was also priced as a luxury service. And I knew that the people who needed it the most could afford it the least. And I wanted to give people a low cost option for it.
Hence the book?
The book, yes.
Right, right. And can I just ask you, because you said, you mentioned a word and I don't know it. You said like you knew that after, you know, in 2017, after breaking up with your partner of 5 years, you knew that if you didn't get into a relationship, you know, romantic relationship with someone else, you'd be SOL. What does that mean?
Shit out of luck.
Shit out of luck of what? Of human touch?
Exactly. If I knew that if I wasn't having sex with somebody, then, you know, I probably wasn't going to get any tender touch. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So... Can you tell me, obviously, I think, you know, the thing with platonic touch is that obviously there is discernments around how it's perceived throughout different cultures in the world, right? So, you know, Absolutely. Like in Europe, a lot of us give like a kiss on the cheek to up to three as well, you know?
Yeah.
Other places is handshake, other places just you wave. Obviously, a quick kiss on the cheek does not replace a touch, a hug, but it's just sort of to show like the differences, you know, in different cultures. And I'm going to look, you know, there's something else I'm going to say around that a bit later on, but even to do with like nudity and stuff, how there's a lot of hypocrisy in the Western world around it. Well, actually, maybe I'll say it now, actually. for example, especially in the US, the way I see it from across the pond, and what I've sort of like perceive is that, and maybe even in the UK, this is the case too, touch and being naked is seen as a sexual thing. Whereas in other countries, touch and obviously, like I said, like cheek kisses are the norm. Being naked is no big deal. Whereas I feel like in some cultures in the West, like, you know, for example, the US, the fear of the naked body actually sexualizes even children. You know, in a way that it's like, I know it sounds a bit weird, but it's like, you know, you look at what they call them, beauty pageant for kids. I mean, they look like Barbie dolls, some of them, you know, with the makeup, the fake hair. And again, another thing, which I know it's a totally different conversation, but I just wanted to put this as a, like almost like a premise to our conversation, is that, for example, even, you know, like prostitution is so, you know, frowned upon, illegal in places, all that kind of stuff, even though it's the oldest job in the world. However, if you put a camera on it, all of a sudden it's very legal and okay. But not for the woman. She's the one who's going to pay the price for being in that movie. However, the man is, you know. So there's so many layers. I don't know if that maybe some of those things kind of are part of why there's this big contradiction. We have this need for human touch, so maybe that's why we are putting a camera on it, or we are calling it a beauty pageant, and you know, and doing it in such a perverted way, you know, with kids. I think it's I have a big problem with, like, you know, children beauty pageant, and I think it's awful that they have to be adults at such a young age. But, you know, so now that I've said what I've said, but can you tell me, why is platonic touch, you know, in the cultures where it is actually rare, why is it so misunderstood and so taboo?
That's a big question, and it's a great question. I think, you know, the thing that I think is helpful to realize is that, you know, who, where, why, and how we've touched people, like you said, does vary from culture to culture, but it's also varied from time to time. One of the things that I love to talk about is that, you know, if it was 100 years ago before the advent of electricity, in the winter, if you lived in a cold climate, you would have been sleeping in a bed with your entire family for warmth, you know, to keep from freezing to death, you know, because fuel's expensive. So this habit that we have of, you know, kind of being more physically distanced from each other is a fairly recent iteration of human society and culture. You know, it hasn't been that way for a long time. And I mean, when you think about it, when, you know, the way that we raise our young, giving your infant a lot of really close physical contact and touch in their first couple of years of life sets them up emotionally and for, you know, neurologically. It's like your brain after you're born is still forming all these neurological pathways. And so one of the things that they found is that human touch will, you know, set you up for, you know, good relationships and, you know, emotional regulation and, you know, ability to trust and be discerning and all these different things. And then as we get older and older, we get further away from it. And I'm not sure when things really changed as far as relationships went, you know, obviously, well, I mean, in some cultures, there still is arranged marriages. Like some of my father's family still have arranged marriages, but, you know, relationships and romantic relationships have really undergone a transformation over the past 50 years. You know, people are getting married later. They're having fewer children. The advent of birth control has certainly been a game changer. And also the fact that women can earn their own money and, you know, have that sort of control, you know, where you don't have to be married anymore and you don't have to have children. And it's just, we've shifted so much in what we expect of our romantic relationships and, you know, what we think we should get out of them. And it's just become more and more difficult. And I know in the United States, about 50% of Americans are single. You know, there are people who will say that single Americans are having more sex than people who are in relationships. Maybe that's the case. I don't know if, I mean, if we're talking about quality of sex, I'm sure there's a huge difference. I mean, I know that, you know, sex in a relationship for me is always a lot better. You know, I'd rather forego sex altogether than have a crappy one night stand. But, you know, I mean, it, you know, again, to go back to this idea that touch equals sex, it's like if you don't have touch available for comfort when somebody's grieving or, you know, relief when they're stressed out or relaxation or what have you, then, you know, there's a lot that doesn't get the, you know, that people don't have the ability or capability to get. And, you know, like your example that you said earlier about, you know, couples who are like, oh, not gonna, my husband's like hugging me or touching me, that must mean he wants sex, or, you know, partner, I'm sorry, you know, because sometimes it goes the other way around. I mean, with my hands-on business, you know, we definitely saw men who were like, yeah, I want more touch and my wife's not into it. But, you know, that's just not available for people, you know, when we sexualize all of the touch.
But, you know, that's interesting because the example you were saying, you know, like obviously men as well crave touch. And I know I was using a very, I guess, cliche example, you know, the man wanting sex, the woman just wants a snuggle, you know. But actually, it's, well, you know, there's something really interesting about touch is that you may be able to, let's say you're in a romantic relationship and it's not going well, or you're in an instant of, you may start building resentment or whatever, you know, things are basically going really bad, and you may still be able to have sex with that person, maybe even kiss a little bit, but if they touch you, it may almost feel like it's burning you. There's something about touch, and actually kissing it also is difficult if you don't like someone or if you're really mad at someone, but there's something about touch that is very hard to fake.
Yeah.
There's an energy exchange that's going on, you know, it's like this zone it's entering that if you don't like that person, you almost want to punch them in the throat, you know, that's anyone, you know, I don't mean it's just a romantic partner, but yeah.
I mean, there's something that they've researched that's called affective touch. It's affective, as opposed to effective. But in studies that they've done, they've found that people can convey an emotion with 1 second of touch. You know, when you touch somebody, you can tell if they're touching you because they're like angry or they're trying to comfort you or... Yes. You know, they want to get your attention or what have you. And we actually have cells in our skin that register affective touch. There's discriminatory touch, which is, you know, is this hot or cold or rough or smooth or, you know, heavy or light? You know, we have those kinds of cells in our skin as well. But then we also have cells in our skin that register emotion.
That is so interesting. Sorry, I'm interrupting you there. But
yeah,
that's so interesting. Because when you said that, I thought this is why spanking and choking can be fine in a loving relationship. However, those things can also be used as, you know, like if you hit someone or strangle someone, it could be attempted murder, or it could be attempted to orgasm if you're in a loving relationship, because the intention is different, right?
Right.
The feeling behind it, and your body can tell. You can tell if someone's slapping you for fun, you know, in play, or if they're slapping you because they're like, you know, F you. You know, it's a very different situation.
Oh, I know. And it's so funny. I've talked to so many women who are like, yeah, I was like having sex with this guy for the first time and he tried to choke me, and I was, you know, and they were just like, what the fuck? And I'm just like, you know, yeah, it's something that needs to be done with somebody that you know and trust, you know. It's like, yeah, that's definitely not first date material.
No, and also that's what they don't teach in porn. You know, if people get this sex education through porn, they're going to think that, oh, that's what's going down. It's like, no, there's a lot of trust that has to be done. A lot of, you know, it's not something that, you know, it just happens, you know, within 5 seconds. I mean, it's that lack of awareness. It's I think people almost... they've desensitized themselves to what touch means and what it is to be loving with someone. And they look
Absolutely.
At things. Yeah, they look at things that are quite dominant on, you know, in the media. And they think that dominance is aggression, and it's two very different things. Mm-hmm. You need to probably be extra gentle, really, to go there. You need to be extra loving, extra more conscious. You need to be someone who's very aware, not the run-of-the-mill one night stand can do that. Not even the run of the mill person can
right.
do that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I just finished reading this book by an Irish philosopher. His name's Richard Carney. And he talks about the phrase he uses is excarnation, which means being out of our bodies. And he draws the parallel between, you know, the fact that so much of sex and sexuality these days is visual. You know, it's all about what a person looks like. And, you know, it's like we're watching sex, and I'm just like, you know, that porn, I find it to be boring. You know, I'm like, I want to know what a person smells like, what they feel like, what our bodies feel like when they're, you know, together, how they fit together, and, you know, what they feel like when they touch me. And, you know, that's way more interesting to me than what a person looks like.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a six pack does not turn me on. I mean, I appreciate it. I appreciate the hard work they've put into it. You know, when I look in the magazines, I'm like, well done, beautiful. Does not look comfortable to me.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to put on all that time at the gym, right?
No, but also, like, I like something, I was just like a bit more comfort. But I think, like you said, like, you know, the visual side of it, like, it's become so visual, you know, the big lips and you know, like, you know, people injecting stuff in their lips, and they're 18, they don't need it, you know, they are, you know, and they all stuff with their hair and to their body. And it's like, to me, it's like you said, like, you know, it's more to do with the being present with that person. But for me, it's also like, what's the attitude? What's the energy? And what is it they're saying to me? And what's the attitude? What, even like from, like, you know, the first time they take me out to dinner, the attitude, how they carry themselves, you know what I'm saying? There's so much more. That's what's going to really turn me on.
How they treat their server. Oh my God.
If you're
rude to the busboy, we're done.
If you're treating
people less than, you know, if you, like, you know, don't talk to a homeless, don't say hello to a homeless person, or you walk by a homeless person and you start, like, complaining about them. Yeah, we're out, you know.
Absolutely. You know, are there any sort of, like, any, I know there's something that you mentioned in your book, are there any sort of cultural myth that discourage nurturing human touch, or did we already cover that? Are there any other myth that maybe we're not even aware play a role into why we are not having more human touch on a platonic level?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of different factors. You know, we did talk about how people are marrying later and having fewer children. We don't live in multi-generational households anymore. I mean, like, my mother has been a widow for 13 years now, and she gets a lot of touch from her granddaughter. You know, her granddaughter's like always, you know, climbing all over her and stuff. You know, if she was living in an old folks home, she wouldn't have that opportunity. People are much more dependent on their pets for their intimate relationships than they have been.
That's huge.
Actually, I'm leaving my day job in about a month, and my boss sent me a picture yesterday night. She just got a new puppy, and I was just like, oh my God, this is a ploy to get me to stay at my job. I'm sure of it. I mean, I just like want to go over there and sit on her couch and snuggle with the puppy all day long. He's so cute. He is so adorable.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. We're very busy these days. You know, we also have a lot of information being thrown at us, you know, like tons and tons of messages and news and advertising and, you know, social media, all these different things, YouTube, all these different things that are trying to get our attention.
Are you saying they're sort of like saturating our nervous system so that we forget to even have touch because we're constantly getting stimulus from the screen, basically?
We get overstimulated from it. It overstimulates our nervous system, and we don't really know how to calm ourselves down. But it also just keeps us really busy. You know, I mean, what were we doing? You know, what were you doing 30 years ago before you spent 7 hours a day online? You know, goofing off.
I miss those days, actually. Yeah.
I know. Let's see what else. There's a lot. I don't know if we've always had as many mental health problems as people do now, but you know, there's a lot of depression and addiction and anxiety and suicidal thoughts and all these different things that, you know, would keep you from maybe forming a romantic relationship. You know, I don't know if, you know, I think it's a harder thing when you think about, you know, being in a relationship with somebody who has a lot of challenges from that perspective, but also from the perspective of the person who has the challenges. You know, when you're depressed, you probably don't feel like going out and spending time with your friends.
You know,
people are a lot more isolated. What else? We've also another really big one, and this one's really hard, is we've really really demonized men and men touching other men and just male touch in general, and, you know, and equating that with sex, you know, that if you touch another man, you're gay. I mean, you know, there's lots and lots of examples.
Which is interesting because in India, it's pretty normal for, I've never been to India, but I think I've read in a book, and I think I had someone tell me about a colleague who came over from India, about how it's really normal to just like hold the hand down the road, like between men in certain parts of India. Now, I may be wrong, and I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone, but like that is totally normal. Well, it's true. If you did this in London, where I live, it's like, the guys would be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Exactly.
It doesn't mean, right? But it shows that, you know, if we're not conditioned to looking at it as being so wrong, it is completely feasible. It's because we're being conditioned now in society to think, well, touch is sexual, hence it has to mean something.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I think about a lot is, There's so many things in our society and culture that are just kind of the path of least resistance, where you do them because it's the easiest thing, and then you go, oh, okay, I don't really like how we live, or, you know, how I treat various relationships or something. And so to think about, hey, I want to do this very differently, you know, it has to be a very deliberate, conscious thought process. You know, that's what, you know, what I'm kind of thinking about around this idea of redesigning human touch. It's like, okay, we know that the way that we're treating human touch doesn't work for a lot of us. How can we do it differently? How can we make it differently? And, you know, create that sort of thing. And I think it's easier to do when you do that.
Yeah, and there's also the added factor of safety, right? Now, obviously, I'm not a man, so I don't know how it feels like for a man. But I think, like, for a woman, like, I know I'm discerning around touch, like, and I say touch, like, you know, platonic touch, like a hug, on two levels. One is, there are people I just don't want near me, you know, even if I like them, I don't necessarily need their presence near my energetic body. I don't need them to be hugging me because I'm just not in that place with them. I don't need my, right. their energy touching mine. It's just something I just can't explain. I just don't need you near me. Like I don't need.
And well, then, you don't have to explain.
But yeah, no. Yeah. I don't explain it to them because I mean, it'll be insulting them as well. But like, you know, I guess it's like, that's the only way I can sort of explain it on here is what I mean. But
right.
And then the second factor would be safety.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Because I know that's something that you touch on in your book as well, which is like permission versus consent, which I think is very important because, like you said, we need to redefine human touch. And part of it is also permission versus content, consent. But right. yeah, definitely like safety. And I've been in like, you know, yoga circles and stuff and where, you know, I arrive on the first day and everybody's hugging everybody and the men, because then they try to activate their masculine energy. They're like, you know, they're like topless, you know, so it's like they're showing their manly chest. And I'm like, I'm really not feeling old. And I'm I used to be so because I wasn't letting people and also just randomly touching me, I'm like, it just feels weird to me, even though I love touch, I love a hug, I love that, but like I'm discerning, right? And so I remember one time in yoga class, I was there was like a Q&A session with the teacher, and I went, yeah, I'm like, I can see everyone, you know, is, you know, touching each other, hugging, but like I'm not in that zone with everybody 100% of the time. Like I, and do you know what the response was? You have to open your heart chakra, which for those who haven't been in
bullshit.
Yoga.
I'm sorry. No.
No, it's complete bullshit. What they mean by heart chakra, if anyone doesn't know who's listening, is basically is where your chest is, like where between your breasts, like where the sternum is. And they say, like, you know, to open it, you have some yoga poses where you can open it to be more loving and receive love. And the thing is, I'm just like, I still wasn't buying it. I'm like, the thing is also over time, there were certain people like I got to know better. And it's like, if they hugged me, it was safe. And I actually liked the energy. I got to know them. I'm like,
right.
The energy is sound, you know? And it's like, there's a lot of misunderstanding and people trying to, I think, if I wasn't so strong-minded, I would have gone like, oh my God, my heart chakra. Oh shit, you know, damn. So I mean, I would have gone down that road, right? But because I'm like, nah, I'm going to say fuck off, you know, obviously with respect, namaste and all, but I'm just, you know, I'm just not, I'm not buying it. I know what I feel. Mm.
Yeah, no, you bring up a really important point. It's like people, and you see this in a lot of different things, you know, it's like people always assume that everybody feels the same way about touch that they do. I mean, I know people who are touch enthusiasts who it's like, you know, they'll meet somebody for the first time and just grab them and give them a huge hug. And mm-hmm. like, you know, even before COVID, I was like, whoa, wait a second here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, it's a really important thing to realize that it's like not everybody has the same comfort level around touch as other people. And,
yeah.
You know, that is a really, really important thing to know. You know, it takes a second to ask somebody, you know, would you like a hug? And, you know, that can make a huge difference because oftentimes I think people who are very touch sensitive have a lot of trauma around touch. And, you know, you go in there for the hug and it's just going to get back, you know, get into their muscle memory again that, you know, hey, it's not safe to touch, you know, whereas, you know, if they want you to hug them, then it's a completely different experience. I mean, I will say, I mean, I hug a lot of people, obviously. And, you know, when I give somebody a really long hug, when it's a hug that they've consented to, you know, like a few seconds in, it's like I feel their body relaxing. And then, like, one of the things that I hear, like, one of the most universal phrases is, oh my God, that feels so good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that because it does. It feels good, but it feels good when it's touch that you've asked for and that you want.
But it's actually, there's also a very scientific explanation behind it, which is actually physiological, which when you are, let's say if I was to hug you now and I have my arms around your back, after a while, like your nervous system that runs through your spine feels it and it literally relaxes it. It literally opens it, you know, and that's why it feels so good, because then it will release all these feel-good chemicals in your body. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I know you mentioned about, you know, people that can be like touch sensitive due to trauma. I think also some of us are, and I think that's more where I stand in that, you know, in terms of like, I'm not feeling, I don't need to be touching everybody, even if it's kumbaya and I'm into kumbaya. Absolutely. I love it. But I'm like, you know, even if I'm not. So for me, it's because I think some of us absorb energy. I can feel people's energy. I think people who are a bit more on the empath side or highly sensitive. I can literally feel if there's something going on, and I don't need to be absorbing any more than I already am. It's kind that's why I'm standing as well sometimes, you know.
Makes perfect sense. I mean, makes perfect sense to me. I tend to be, I read people's energy a lot too, and sometimes, you know, but it doesn't even matter. The important thing is, I think that, you know, people recognize that everybody has different boundaries. I mean, boundaries are so confusing to people. Yeah. And, you know, when somebody says no, it can mean not right now, not that thing, not with you. And I read something the other day that I just thought was so brilliant. It said, when somebody sets a boundary with you, they're not trying to end the relationship, they're trying to continue it.
Oh, you know, that's beautiful.
I know. I loved that so much when I heard it.
Oh, you know, that is going to be another. So going to be a slogan. Is this your quote?
That one is not me. I can give you another good one from my friend Francesca Gentili, which is, a boundary is for me and not against you.
Wow. Do you know what? So for example, I'm gonna make a note of these, because I'm intending on doing merchandise. I'm looking for a cartoonist to do a few bits and bobs, and I wanna have those with the quote of who said it or what episode, and of like things that I thought is either entertaining or informational, you know, or useful. And I think those would be great, because that could be something to even have at the front of a t-shirt or a mug, you know, like as a reminder. Especially at work, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I like, there's a line of these t-shirts. It's like hashtag ask me. Oh. And I have a friend who she wants the ask me before you touch me.
I like that.
Getting the one that's hashtag ask me for a hug, you know. But it's just like, you know, if you realize, you know, if people realize that everybody has their own boundaries, and, you know, there's so many different factors that go into, you know, it's your upbringing, you know, how you were raised in your family. It can be around religion, it can be around gender, it can be around, like if you're in a work situation, like it's different for me to hug somebody in a professional situation than it is in a social situation. It could be about your relationship status, you know, like, if I hug this person, my partner's gonna get jealous, so I can't do it. You know, I mean, there's just so many different factors. It could be, you know, around, you know, physical ability, you know, like there's some people who, like, I have a friend, for instance, she's super sensitive. She said when she was a kid, she had to wear her shirts inside out because the seams would bother her, you know, and it's like, you know, so there are people for whom, you know, touch can be physically painful. You know, it's like, oh, you go to rub somebody's shoulders when they have a sunburn. Mm-mm. That's just not going to be good.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. Can you explain, because I know we just sort of touched on it, but I would like to have, like, could you give like some example of what's the difference between, when it comes to touch, and what's the difference between permission, giving permission versus consent? And like, how do we, how can we phrase this? How can we, you know, express that in words in situations when we need to?
Yeah. I just want to say first off that this is not my original concept. It comes from Betty Martin, who is a touch facilitator and educator out of Seattle. She actually just put out a book called The Wheel of Consent, which is her work is excellent. But she draws a distinction between permission and consent. So permission would be, can I hug you? So that's really about, hey, I want to hug you. I don't really care about whether you want to hug or not. You know, this is what I want and I'm going for it. Whereas consent is, would you like a hug? So you're asking the other person to say, you know, you're giving them an opportunity to say yes or no. And, you know, it's always better to err on the side of consent than permission. And it doesn't, you know, it takes a little bit of practice.
What do you mean by that? Better to err on the side of consent than permission?
I mean, if you're asking people for permission, you're not really giving them a lot of autonomy. But whereas if I come up to you and I'm going to ask you for a hug, obviously I want a hug because I'm asking for it. But if I'm saying, can I hug you? That's about what I want. Would you like a hug is about what they want. So it's giving them a space to say yes or say no.
Right. So actually I hear that. Because actually if I said to you, can I hug you? And you say no, it's like a rejection. Whereas
it's more of a rejection.
Right. And then if I said, would you like a hug? It's like saying, what do you want? And then you can say yes or no. Then it's just me saying, then it's kind of like, it has this facade of it's me wanting to cater to your need and desire. Like, would you like a hug? Yes or no? Doesn't matter because I'm asking. It's like me asking, do you want a cup of tea?
Right. There's actually.
What if I said, can I have a cup of tea? Would be like, no. That's weird, right?
No. There's actually, it's funny that you mentioned that. There's a really famous cartoon video about tea and consent, you know, and it's about, would you like a cup of tea? You know, you wouldn't serve tea to somebody who didn't want tea, right?
Right.
If you look up tea and consent, you'll find it. It came out a few years ago and it's
I love this because it suddenly made sense to me when I said, well, can I have a cup of tea? And if you said no, it'd be weird. I mean, in the UK, it'd be weird because tea is part of the love language here. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's very comforting.
It is.
I'm
going to go on a total tangent with you. Do you know?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
This music style chap hop where it's like guys who are rapping about tea.
No, I don't know.
Oh my God,
that's
so good. What's the one guy's name? Professor Elemental. He's got like all these videos about tea.
Oh, I have to have a look at that.
You'll love it. But yes, tea is a love language. My father was Indian, so there was a lot of tea in my house. It was all the time.
I think the Brits stole it from the Indian culture, actually, originally. That's why they've stole it or inherited, whatever you want to call it. But you know what I'm saying? It comes from India, basically. That's the idea. Yeah, yeah. No, I don't know him. I know Professor Green. I mean, not personally, but just he's a famous singer here. Yeah.
But yeah, so exactly. It's around, you know, one of the things to kind of get back to sex and touch a little bit, you know, one of the things that the romantic myth tells us is that, you know, when you're in a relationship with your soulmate, they're going to know exactly how to touch you and where to touch you and all this stuff. So it's around creating more dialogue around it, which people think is very unromantic and unsexy, but you know, it also.
Well, I tell you what's unromantic and unsexy is not feeling comfortable about how they touch you. And them not listening to you, and them not applying when you're telling them how to touch you.
But we make this assumption that we can't speak up about it. So, you know, opening up these like dialogues, these little like micro interactions. You know, there's billions of them around the world every day. You know, it allows us a chance to change the culture around touch.
Can I ask you a question now?
Yes.
You know, so let's say someone's like, you know, with a friend or colleague or whatever, and that person, can I have a hug or can I hug you? And you don't want to. And obviously they haven't listened to this or to you and know the difference on how to ask for a hug. What would be the best way to say no to them in a way that's not aggressive or confrontational?
Well, I don't think it's a one size fits all answer. And part of what you're talking about, I mean, when you're talking about with a colleague, there's a lot of situations around touch where people feel like they can't say no because there's a power differential. You know, like if your boss is like, oh, I want to give you a hug, you might be like, oh, I don't know about that. I don't feel comfortable with that, but I can't say no to you because
that will be a no from me. Thank you.
I mean, you can just say no, thank you. Hey, it's COVID and I'm still not touching people.
Yeah.
You know, I still don't feel comfortable, but you know, no is a complete sentence.
True.
You can add thank you at the end if you want. You could say, I only hug people that I'm very close to, or, you know, I only hug my family members, or, you know, I'm just not comfortable with it, you know, I think a lot of times it comes across well if you're confident about your boundaries, you know, if you're not second guessing yourself and going, oh, maybe I shouldn't say that, you know, if you're like, nope, you know, and sometimes the other person will get angry, you know, and that's their problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't really need to have an explanation, you know, you can just say no, thank you. A lot of times I think when you do explain, when you say no, because then it gives people a chance to try and
ask you more questions and argue
with you and wear you down or change your mind or, well, have you thought about this? Or, you know, so if you just, you know, and you don't owe people an explanation, you know, no, thank you.
You know, this is
because I prefer not to.
Yeah, there'll be no. Yeah, it's like I was just thinking about Phoebe in Friends. You know, the kind of answer she'd give. I used to love that stuff when she'd say, "I wish I could, but I don't want to."
Yeah,
it's like, which I know you can't really say this. Which I mean, but it kind of is what we mean. It's like, I wish I could give you that, but I really don't want to, so I'm not gonna.
Yeah,
obviously people shouldn't be doing, you know, just coming at you and asking for touch if it's not something that you have a history in doing or that you haven't set up a thing. But you know, I wonder sometimes, and also, you know, sometimes you meet people. It could be a date. I'm thinking of a date. And there's good rapport and there's a good vibe. And when you talk, you know, when you walk, let's say you go for a walk after dinner and accidentally, it's unconscious, but like your arms sometimes touch theirs and they touch yours, you know? But it's like this natural, it's funny how in certain settings, a first meet can actually allow to just do that and then maybe on a goodbye, give a hug and it feels completely fine. Whereas in another setting, which is why I guess like you said about, you know, how to say no and I guess how to say yes, there is no cookie cutter answer. It really is about being, I guess it's knowing also almost like having this container for ourselves, what we allow, what we would not allow.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it.
And it's like, if we don't feel comfortable, to be fine by saying it, to just say it, or to, if you don't know how to say it, to excuse yourself and remove yourself from the situation, right? If you don't have the words, you know, like you said, you don't need explanations. And some people would not listen to explanation because you may be wavering in that. In that moment, right? So don't give them the chance to hook onto your wavering.
Right, just exactly.
Let them go.
Another thing that I thought of when you were talking about that is something I've seen people do a lot is when somebody goes in for a hug, they stick their hand out for a handshake.
Oh, to stop that person. Do you know what I do? I put my hand on their shoulder. How do you call it? Is that... You know, you have the shoulder, and if you put your own hand in front of your shoulder, but slightly down, so it's a little bit on your chest.
Like on the clavicle.
Yeah, on the clavicle, and just go for a cheek kiss. You know, go all, you know, oh, it's lovely seeing you. Lovely meeting you.
You could bow to them. Oh. You could stick up both your hands and just say no. You know, I mean, you can try a combination of body language and, you know, words. I mean, I think it's a good thing for people to, like, if this is something that is problematic for people, you know, it's like, I think for a lot of people, it's like, they're some people who want more touch and it's like they need to learn to ask for it. And then there are other people who don't want, who want less touch. And so they have to learn to say no, you know, maybe, maybe practice and have kind of a stock thing, you know, like do some role playing with a friend, you know, where it's like, you know, where the friend, you know, where you say no and the other person says, okay. And then you say no and the other person's like, why not? And you just say, just keep saying no, you know,
yeah,
so that
yeah,
you,
practicing
so
that
you have, that you have like your kind of stock response or answer, you know, especially, you know, and you can, you know, and it might be, you know, you, no, I'm sorry, touch is something that's very personal for me. I'm, you know, I'm very, picky about who I share it with, or, you know, whatever it is that, that you want, you know, you can tell people why. No, I don't want to be touched because, you know, when I was, from the time I was 3 years old, my father used to beat the shit out of me. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's, you know, again, it's like, you know, it's the part of like not explaining. And it's, there's also this other thing where, where people are not owed our pain. Right. And so I think this is where the being strong and not explaining. And I think, sometimes, you know, I was trying to think, because sometimes it is, I mean, I'm very good at saying no and putting boundaries up when it comes to, you know, sex and safety. You know, I don't have it as much in terms of like relationship, asking for what I want and need. I'm working on that. But on things like that, safety, I'm like really strong. And I was thinking, there are times actually where even I can feel a bit uncomfortable. And I was thinking, what is a good phrase? And sometimes like, you know, it's too early for me. I'm not in the mood.
Again, it's really about, I think, people figuring out what works best for them and having something that's kind of at the ready. You know, if you know that you're a person doesn't like to be touched and you find that people try to do it a lot, you know, I mean, like, I tend to run around with a lot of alternative communities and everybody hugs everybody there. Yeah. And I have some friends who are like not into it and they're just like, nope, 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 you know, and they struggle with it. So
yeah, it can feel like a struggle if the if you believe the message that all your heart chakra is needs repairing.
that's such garbage. It's like,
it is such
okay,
garbage.
I've like opened my heart chakra and I still don't want to hug anybody.
Yeah, and I think that's part of brainwashing. I mean, that school turned out to have a few twists and turns within. So, you know, I just didn't buy it. I wasn't there to buy it. I bought what was useful and that's it. But
I mean, you know, I understand, you know, it's like people are attracted to alternative communities because, you know, they, because they want that, that sense of belonging and connection.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of abuse around it. You know, just like I was saying, you know, I have friends who are just like, they don't like to be touched. They don't like to be hugged. And, you know, they go into these social situations and they're just like, get me away from these people, you know, it's not fun for them.
It's not, but you know, I guess like, I guess to round up on that, on, you know, I guess like the power of a hug is that to me, it's like, it can be so sacred because a good hug will literally make me want to cry because it feels like returning home almost. It's this, it can really, like I can still remember this one hug and it was this one, it sort of had like a bit of a romantic thing going on. And we and I honestly had to, it's happened to me a couple of times actually, where I had to hide my tears rolling down, like silent tears, because I was like, they're going to think I'm crazy. but it can really have the effect. If someone gives you a hug that is so profound and the energy is right and you both there to receive it and give it, it's like, it's really, really moving. And so I think certain things, I, you know, it's sacred to me and I don't need to be giving that to the whole arena, you know, it's the selected few that I feel I'm feeling a connection and, you know,
I think that's, you know, it's, that's half the battle is knowing where your boundaries are and knowing what's acceptable and what isn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's so powerful.
Yeah. And good, you know, for those who can give it to everyone. Again, like this is not like, it's just, you know, I guess like we're you know, both talking from our own experience, but you know, you have people like, and I know you mentioned her in your book is Amma, who gives hugs to, you know, hundreds of people
in a session, right?
So, and that's not cheap. That's very profound. So I don't mean it to be, you know, it's just like everyone has a different constitution. She can obviously, she knows how to handle all these people. Yeah. I don't know how she does it.
She's he's channeling some sort of deity or something. I mean, I've actually, like, you know, one of my many ideas about, you know, how to disperse touch more, I've thought about starting a church and doing something like that, but boy, I don't know if I could do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite amazing that she can do it. I mean, I'm just, you know, I think
it is. It's really amazing.
Some people are built for it, and that's why I can understand why some people, they can just go out and they need to hug, like that guy in the office. He needed to hug everybody every morning.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that, you know, it's like everyone has different in taste. It's like some people are
exactly
into certain kinks, some people are not, and there's nothing right wrong with it, right? So,
yeah.
Go on, sorry.
I was just going to say this idea, you know, I think if people are listening to this podcast and there's just one takeaway that they can get from it, is just to realize that everybody has a different level of comfort around touch, and especially right now after the pandemic is winding down, and that you just, you need to realize that and, you know, find the people who are saying yes instead of saying no, because I mean, I can't imagine like trying to give somebody a long hug when they don't want it. Oh my God, that sounds terrible. You know, but
no, absolutely.
So yeah, but it's like, it's different for every person, and you know, it's better to ask and get consent and, you know, be hugging somebody that wants a hug from you.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I just saw a post today on LinkedIn and I thought it was a great idea. It's basically, it's a post from a guy called James Osborne. I don't know him. I'm not connected with him on LinkedIn, but he came up on my feed and it said, is an idea for those returning to their offices post-pandemic to manage people's different anxieties around, you know, personal interaction. And so there's a picture with three baskets, each containing wristbands.
Yep.
And so one basket is red. It says, hi, I'm keeping my distance. The second one is yellow. Okay, we're talking, but not touching. And then the third one, it says, okay, with hugs and high fives, which is green. And I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
We need to do that with with hugs and touching.
We need to do that when we go out. Actually, my friends in California have an annual camp out and they're doing one in August, and somebody's bringing, I don't know if they're doing bracelets or name tags or something, but it's like, you know, where you can list your preference for, you know, hey, I'm still keeping my distance from people, or exactly.
And I love it because it feels inclusive to those of us who are not afraid of COVID and to those of us who are afraid of COVID, right? So it kind of makes it okay for everyone to have their own take on it and feel on it, right? So I love that. I love that. I wanted to ask you a question in terms of like a solution for, you know, us who are solo. Some people say single. I'll call it solo. And if we are shy to ask a friend for a hug, and if we cannot afford to pay for a massage, what do you suggest we do? What are there any like solutions around that we can do for ourselves as a self-care for hugs?
Yes. I actually, during the pandemic, I wrote an article, I think it's on Spirituality and Health website, that's about like ways to do self-touch, which obviously isn't the same thing, but it can be helpful. One of the things that I find is really useful is like to take a blanket and like pull it really tightly around myself, that it makes me, you know, that it mimics that feeling of a hug. I mean, you know how popular the weighted blankets have gotten. It's, you know, it's like that. Another like fairly low cost option for people is cuddle parties, where you get together with a group of strangers and it's facilitated, and the first hour or so is kind of a workshop on consent and boundaries, and then the next couple hours are just people sharing touch, sharing platonic touch. And that, you know, so those are fairly inexpensive. You know, they're usually, most places, I think they're around $20. You know, cause like you said, you know, there's a lot of people who are too shy to ask their friends. Going to see a professional cuddler is probably a pretty similar price to getting a massage. So not necessarily. You could go and get a pedicure.
With the foot massage included.
Yeah, exactly. You could go, like, the next time you get your hair cut, ask your hairdresser to, like, you know, do a really long, luxurious wash, you know, hair washing
with the scalp massage.
Yeah, exactly.
But you want them to really, you can tell the difference between those who are into it and not. Now, even when you go for a massage, there's nothing worse than them not being into it or talking to their colleague. Same with your hair massage. It's like, don't know. And don't talk to me either. Don't ask me questions. I'm like, I want it to be silence. I need to be receiving right now. I am paying you so that I can just receive this because I really, and then we can chat afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
I'm all for chatting after and before, but during, nah, mm-hmm. nah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the biggest thing with this is for, you know, regardless of, you know, where you're at, what your barriers are, is that you're not going to be able to get more touch without getting out of your comfort zone in some way. Mm. You know, you're going to have to take a risk, whether that's, you know, opening up and, you know, asking people. I mean, one thing you could do, it's a little bit more fun to do it with a bunch of people. You could go stand on a street corner with a sign that says free hugs. You know, and so, maybe people won't take you up on it, but you know, there's probably somebody who's going to walk by who's like, true. Wow, I could really use a hug right now. So it's there's different ways you could think about what is it there, it's like blues dancing or contact improv. There's a couple of different social dance gatherings that happen where, you know, people touch each other a lot.
Oh, actually going to salsa, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, taking dance classes is a really good thing.
Yeah.
It's gonna take trying something different or doing something different and taking a risk. If people feel like they're too shy to ask people one-on-one, the thing that I did with the book is I set it up, the book teaches you how to share touch with your friends, with people that you already know. And the idea behind it is, you know, anytime that we touch people one-on-one, it's like we think about that as something that's romantic or sexual. So when you do it in a group of like four people, then it becomes a social experience instead of a sexual experience. And it's funny and it's goofy and, you know, everybody's like nervous and weird and awkward. And, you know, I mean, even just like a single exercise of where one person is touching the other person's hand is like totally profound and relaxing. And, you know, people are like, wow, I didn't want that to end. You know, even when you're just doing it for a minute or two, I mean, you can just get so much information from that.
No, I love that. Can I give you some of, I had like three ideas I put down about the solution if we're solo and we don't want to ask friends or we can't afford to pay for a massage or go to the hairdressers and get that massage. First one is I've been considering this for years actually. I wanted to buy one of those body support pregnancy pillow. You know the one that's U-shape?
Uh-huh.
It looks really fun and it's like one of those that actually envelops your whole body and I wonder if that's quite comforting at night. I've never tried it, but I'm up to trying it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely snuggle up with a bunch of, I have a body pillow that I sleep with.
Oh, there you go, because I have tons actually, of things too.
And a weighted blanket as well. My theory on why the weighted blanket works is because, you know, when human beings were first coming around as a species thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, we used to sleep in big piles in the cave for warmth and safety, you know? So it's like we were used to, or, you know, even that thing of like sleeping with your family when it was cold, you know, where, you know, that's, you know, having our body pressed up against a lot of other bodies is,
I guess it's the pressure, it's that touch against our nervous system.
And it's like, and you learn that when you're an infant, you know, it's like when your mother holds you, it feels good.
Well, listen, one of my friends, Chala, when he was a baby, she was like, if you hold him, he won't cry. That was the best with it. And that held him. Yeah. It was so comforting to hold him as well. The energy that comes out of babies is intense. It's amazing. But you can tell it's really easy to see why, because you are wrapping them. Their nervous system is completely wrapped up, you know, we're just holding them, is so comforting for them, you know, like in the belly. And then number two would be like, if you go to a gym and there's power plates, there's an exercise that you can, it's not an exercise, it's like at the end when you relax or stretch on them, the thing where you can take the mat that's on the power plate, it's like a almost like a big smile shape or like a U shape, you what you do is that you sit in front of the power plate, and then you take that mat and you wrap it around your back, and you make sure that you wrap it. You don't just have it behind you. You wrap it around by holding with your hands, like crossing in front of your body, and you turn it on, and it vibrates all over your back. It helps relax your back. And I think
that sounds amazing.
Yeah, and I think that will, you know, also help, you know, just activate that nervous system in your spine to soothe it. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, if you have back issues, don't do it. But yeah, if everything is kosher in your back, you know, you can do that. And then the last one is, which obviously is a bit harder to do, but like a self hug.
Yeah. It's not.
And you can move side to side when you give yourself a little self hug. Yeah, totally.
Those are all fantastic ideas. Oh, something else that you, when you were talking about holding your friend's baby, there are actually hospitals all over the world that have programs where people go in and they hold premature babies. They've found that it helps them to, their organs develop faster, their immune systems develop faster, they gain weight, they get out of the hospitals faster.
Absolutely.
So there are programs of volunteers who will go to the hospital and cuddle premature babies. So that could be a reward.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not, you know, the touch is more one way, you're giving touch instead of receiving it, but I still think it could be really
it's almost like it's a different paradigm when you actually hold a baby, because actually the energy transfer has happened, but it's like you're giving them because they need to hold, you're giving them a hug, you hold it because they need to, you know, they can't, you can't just leave them on the floor. Right? You have to hold them.
Right,
But actually, it's one of those that you give, but you receive more in return almost. It's like the feeling that comes out of, the energy that comes out of a baby is so pure, you know? It's really moving, and it's really healing just to hold them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's how they relax. I mean, I had a baby once poo whilst I was holding him. He had nappies. And then the mom said, oh, that's because he's so relaxed with you. And I was like, that's one way to say it. But I guess I was like, you know what? I'm going to take that as a compliment because, you know, if it was an adult, it'd be very different, right? So,
Totally.
So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to move on to the finishing thoughts, which are two questions I ask every one of my guests. And the first one is, what do you wish you'd realized or understood at 18?
Wow, that's a great question. I think that it's okay to be different. And when you accept your own weirdness, it gives other people permission to accept their own. And that it can be something that's a bridge and not a wall.
I love that. And the second one is, what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
Probably mostly around, I'd say these days, it's around people who have ambiguous boundaries, you know, where they're just a little bit too far one way or another. I like really clear, direct communication, and people being fuzzy doesn't really do it for me.
So, Epiphany, this has been so lovely speaking with you about this. I've really enjoyed that chat.
Thank you for having me on.
And please tell us all where we can find you, where can people buy your book, can they work with you, like give us all the good stuff.
Sure. So the best way to get a hold of me or find me is my website, which is www.nurturinghumantouch.com. And there's links there for all kinds of articles, podcasts, resources. You can buy the book off of there. You can buy the book pretty much on any of the major e-retailers. It's out in paperback, ebook and audiobook format, which also comes with like a little download so that you can have all the exercises and things in there. And I'm on Instagram under somebody underscore hold underscore me, which is fun. I often write little things that I'm thinking about touch, or, you know, experiences that I have or what have you. I'm actually getting ready to go back to school, and I'm going to be moving out of Austin, and I'm hoping to reopen Karuna Sessions at some point, but yeah, or be able to travel and do it, or I'm not sure yet. Not sure what's happening with my hands-on work, but I'd love to get back to it now that we're more comfortable with being physically close to each other and in the same space. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
We need to get back to normal. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for today, Epiphany, and all the best with your studies. And thank you so much for being game with me today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com, or come and find me on Instagram at Tool for Dish It Podcast. See you next week. And until then,
using health inappropriately.